Howdy, everybody. Bob Tallman for No Spin Rodeo. No politics, no BS, just hard-hitting news and rodeo commentary from two of the most trusted sources in our sport. Kendra Santos, Tommy Joe Lucia. Listen up. Here we go.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to a quarter century of No Spin Rodeo. I'm Tommy Joe Lucia, joined with Greg Teagarden, our producer, and the illustrious First Lady of Pro Rodeo Journalism. Her name's Kendra Santos. Hello, crew, first mate, and all here on No Spin. How are you on this one day later than normal on this Wednesday?
I'm doing great, and I've got to ask, I know you're at Pendleton, but which lively spot on grounds are you?
Well, I am happy to be here at the 115th Pendleton Roundup, but I am at the Happy Canyon, which is the night show that they have after the rodeo here that they've had the pageant. And I'm in their very famous director's room, which, by the way, last night after the Expos event, you go in, it's a tradition at the end of the event, you go in, you sit down with all of the directors and you drink some Pendleton, whether you want to or not. And the amount of history that's on the walls here, all of their past directors, and this is all of the cast and crew getting ready for Happy Canyon. So it will be a little noisy, but it's just a damn cool spot.
It is a cool spot, and I've had the privilege of being in there, and I laugh when you talk about drinking some Pendleton, because some of my Canadian media cohorts from Calgary were headed down there for the first time, and the one, I love him, Ted. He shoots me a text and he goes, I need to know protocol at Pendleton. Does a person have to drink Pendleton whiskey or can you drink any kind of whiskey? And I'm like, take your chances there, Sidewinder.
Let me tell you one thing. These people, these guys, Greg can suck at this. Their alcohol tolerance is beyond question. The most mighty alcohol tolerance. Because 8 o'clock in the morning, these guys are hitting something, and they're still going at 3 a.m. Almost 24 hours later.
Highest beer tapped to patron in any rodeo I've ever been to.
Incredible amount of consumption. Rock on here in Pendleton.
That's why they let her buck.
They let her do a lot of things. But
they let your hair down.
Buck with a B.
So while we're on the P words, before we get to some Pendleton, which is early on here, Puyallup. We've got to hit a few highs and lows from Puyallup, the cinch playoffs that just played out up in Washington over the weekend. Of course, Pendleton Slack, where you are today, just played out. And then today's the first perf. So for those who are listening to this later, today is Wednesday, September 10th. So today's the first perf at Pendleton. Anyway, with 20 days left in the regular season, it's kind of quite a lot about the bubble, and there are countless dramatic stories, as always, going on in our cowboy and cowgirl contingent. So let's just hit a few highs and lows from Puyallup. I feel like for me, the biggest headline from the Washington State Fair Rodeo is that our world number one in the all-around and the bull riding, Stetson Wright was seriously injured in round one of Pool B. He was jerked down and stomped both barrels, like basically in the midsection. And he like on adrenaline made it to his knees and immediately waved for help and was even going so far as to point to exactly, okay, the problem's right here, my ribs. And so he knew, and it was for those of us who were at Cheyenne with Lane Frost on July 30th, 1989, it was kind of a chilling rodeo rerun. But, you know, as has happened more than once recently, the response was incredible. And thank God one of Lane's many legacies to our sport is the vest that all the Roughstock riders wear. And there's no telling how much that did to help and possibly save Stetson. Really an interesting twist was that his brother Ryder was the next guy. And I mean, he wasted zero time, nodded his head, won the round, and then hit the ground running, you know, to the gate and jumped in the ambulance with his brother, with Stetson. And you could see in the shots of the arena at Puyallup that the hospital was just right up the hill. Like, it's in the background of all the shots. So that was also a lucky break. So he got immediate care. He has broken ribs and a punctured lung on his left side. The interesting piece of it now is that Stetson is saying, see you in 2 weeks at Sioux Falls, and the doctors are saying, kid, you need to sit this one out for at least 6. And so we shall see. But of course, those of us who are a little bit older and like old enough to be his mama, I'm like, okay, like when you break a rib and it starts, you know, injuring, puncturing arteries and organs, you know, that's like life-threatening stuff. And so Superman or not, like, I don't know. I promise you that his parents will be in on this decision. And so that's the best we can do, right?
Well, and if you look back when he got injured before at the circuit finals, the original thing was, I'll be right back. But Stetson did the right thing.
Yes.
He waited, like, non-traditionally the right thing. He waited to come back and came back strong. And I suspect that that's his mentality. He may think he'll be all right in 2 weeks, but I do think Stetson's the kind that if he doesn't feel ready in 2 weeks, Kendra, I think he's smart enough to know that Vegas is coming.
Right. And he's going to be in contention no matter what happens between now and September 30th, you know, in the next 20 days. So he's going to be in contention probably for 3 world titles. So meanwhile, Stetson and Weishi Shala continue to be 1-2 in that order in the all-around and the bull riding race. Stetson's 10th in the bronc riding, and Weishi has worked his way up to 11th in the bareback riding. So if those guys both make it into events, holy smokes, that's going to be so fun to watch. There was so much gamesmanship at Puyallup, and there were things like, okay, Riley George won the breakaway, but Haley Williams, when she made the final four, and everyone who made the final four automatically advances to the Governor's Cup in Sioux Falls, she immediately announced that she was going to turn out at Pendleton. And so, you know, she just is not personally a fan of the grass. And so, you know, that you make Sioux Falls and you know, can make a decision like that just immediately and announce it to the world, you know. California's Jacek Frost in the bareback riding was one of the most I guess just like shot up the ladder. He won Puyallup in the bareback riding and went from 25th to 16th in the world, and of course now advances to Sioux Falls. So that was like moving up 9 spots at one rodeo tells you, you know, this time of year, what an event like that can do. The Canadian bronc riders swept it in the saddle bronc riding. So Dawson Hay, Zeke Thurston, Logan Hay, and Ben Anderson, which are the fun havingest cowboys you will ever meet. I don't know. And I'd love to see them turn loose in the letter buck room at Pendleton. But those guys swept it at Puyallup. So that was, you know, good for them. The team roping in Puyallup got a little wonky. There was, you know, it was kind of like a little of this and a little of that. It wasn't everybody's, you know, finest showing, including some of the steers or whatever. But in the end, Clint Summers and Jade Corkill won it. Jade Corkill gets some sort of cool cat award for everyone because he won 3 world titles and then decided he was burned out and went home and did some different things and then just comes back and he's gonna, you know, contend for a gold buckle again. Veteran Clay Smith and his rookie heeler Nikki Northcott, they set the 3.7 second arena record at Puyallup and then ended up 2nd overall and moved Nikki up into the top 15 for the first time this year. That was a big deal. Riley Webb, stud. That's no No shocker. He won the tie down. Halen Lied won the barrel race. Kai Hamilton, who in his pool took a hook in and had stitches in his chin early on, then won Puyallup with Wacy Shaw a second. But back, I was going to say on a cool note from Puyallup, I thought it was kind of neat and a little bit, I love kind of different prizes, and they gave spurs to the winners on sort of a, I don't know if sad is the right word, a little bit sad, a little bit disappointing, something that a rodeo of this caliber and importance, it was sad to me that, you know, some of the world leaders in the barrel race opted not to run their best horses there. And that, you know, they were very gracious about what they said publicly, but I think that's really too bad because some of the other barrel racers, you know, kind of spoke up and said some things for them that situation is a little somewhat notorious. So these people planned ahead to, you know, we didn't see Sister. And you know, we didn't see reigning world champion passing out his last week, and as just a couple of examples. So,
well, so the ground wasn't. I've heard that the ground's not great in Puyallup, and I can probably comment two different ways on this. For it to be so instrumental in the tour, one could make an argument that they should get the right people. I know a guy who's pretty good with dirt. Get the right people, get the right equipment, get the right something to make it right. Now, the flip side of that, though, is all of those competitors competed on the same ground. So, I have a bigger problem when ground is different between any particular round. And if you look at Pendleton here, just like we said, opting to not run on grass, I wouldn't even lope in with the American flag like they do as fast as they do on grass, right? But still, to run barrels on grass, really?
Well, they do make their turns on the dirt. On well-worked dirt at Pendleton. But there's a difference for me, and I was not at Puyallup, but there's a difference between, yes, sometimes even at some of the biggest rodeos, maybe the moisture content or something is slightly different from a, morning slack to a perfect night or whatever it is. But when you start talking about perfs only, same time of day or whatever time of day, but dangerous, if you're talking about dangerous,
correct. That's I different. Agree. If it's dangerous, could harm the animal or the jockey, Kendra, you've got zero argument with me. Dangerous is one thing. And if it's, here's what I think, I honestly think, if it's dangerous, they all should band together and just not run. If it's dangerous, right, and it could compromise your animal, your best friend,
okay.
Why don't more of them get together and not run?
But remember, what they did was make a trip there and season some horses or whatever, knowing that they weren't going to win anything. Because it's mandatory. If you don't run at Puyallup, you can't compete at Sioux Falls.
I forgot about that. Now, some of you, it's real quick, and I wasn't planning this, Kendra, but I will say this. I'm going to do a shout out to Garrett Yerrigan. If you want to know how the playoff tour works, go look up his Instagram. I think he calls himself Plowboy Bob or Professor Plowboy. And he does a little deal where he talks about what the tour standings and points, because so many of us consider the tour secondary, right, in our minds, but it has a primary role, and he does a nice job. So if you want to know in a humorous way, it was very good. Good job, Garrett. But, you know, like you said, four going there and then having to come there, you know, that's a different story. You know what? I changed what I said. If it's mandatory that they go there and it's dangerous, that's straight up BS. Not straight up. That's just wrong.
Well, let's just roll ahead to Pendleton. Okay. Which kicked off, as you guys well know, with the Extreme Bowls event Monday and Tuesday this week over at Happy Canyon, where you are in the director's room. Is that what it's called? Okay.
Yep, director's room.
So this is my understanding. Correct me if I'm not right here. This 20-year-old permit kid from Gillette, Wyoming, Hayden Welsh, he won it. And then Kai Hamilton was the Extreme Bowls year-end champ. Is that correct?
It is correct. And this kid has won, Hayden Welsh. So this isn't exactly, he's won enough to potentially qualify for the NFR on his permit, but hasn't got his card. So none of it counts, which makes you wonder where he went to college, right? I mean, really? But this kid, Kendra, and you know, it's kind of this, I'm telling you, and Rocker Steiner said this. Rocker said, kind of, I can't remember what I read, he said, but it was right. It's like, get ready, boys, we're here, kind of his class of cowboys. This kid kind of reminds me of that, right? He's got long hair, lots of energy, and rides. Well, I mean, rode three for three. Only two guys rode three for three, okay? And he was one of them. Okay, last year's Extreme Bowls champion went three for three. So did this Hayden Welsh kid. And he was so excited to win. And you can tell he loves it. He's young. I just can't believe he's got $140,000 won on his permit. Right?
Okay, so he, by the way, yes, he has over $147,000 won on his permit, which is triple that of second place. And if he had his card with the same earnings, he would be ranked 11th in the world and likely headed to his first NFR. I was thinking today, this reminds me, I think, of a couple of people. The first one, Keenan Hayes, the bareback rider. He did this in 2022. Keenan, everybody was saying the same thing. What in the world is this kid doing? He won almost $109,000 on his permit. And it was the same thing. They're like, man, he'd be at the NFR, you know? And then the next year as a PRCA rookie, when he did get his card in 2023, became the first rookie to win the bareback riding world title as a rookie. But then also it reminded me of in the bull riding, Sage Kimsey, who in 2013 set a permit record with almost 48,000. So look, this kid's won 100,000 more than Sage did to set the permit record, which was 12 years ago, mind you. But then Sage turned around in 2014 and won the world as a rookie, which was only the second time ever. Bill Cornell had done it in 1963. That's a long time between 1963 and 2014. So we've seen it before, but this kid, Hayden Welsh.
Yeah, well, Kai, you can't take anything away from Kai. You know, he still had the stitches in his chin. Of course, the night before we find out about Stetson, and back to Stetson real quick, when I saw that video, my guts turned inside out. The good news was I didn't see it live because I already knew, you know, what his injury report was. But Stetson not coming to this Rank 45 X Bulls event, you know, Stetson has a good lead, right? And him not coming, that kind of made it a three-way race going into this, right? Wasey and Kai and Hutchings. And just Shala got bucked off of two bulls. Kind of uncommon, but he got bucked off of two bulls. And then Hutchings, I think he placed third and fifth in a round or two, and it allowed Kai to go ahead and take and take it. And the other thing that I thought was interesting, watch this bull riding if you haven't on Cowboy Channel. Okay, a couple things. These ex-bulls kids are riding bulls, Kendra. And I mean, now you know I come from a long, long, long heritage of PBR. This was as good a bull riding in 2 days as you're going to see. Bulls match the riders. It was very, 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 it was an outstanding event. And I want to shout out because they did a wild card round. So the first performance, 22 guys got one bull. The top six advanced. Well, in my mind, when you hear wild card, I'm thinking, oh boy, we're going to be scraping the bottom of the barrel, right? You know, we'll throw off 21 guys. Rode four out of the first six. But as I got to noticing, it's because guys didn't get their ex-bulls points. So there were really good bull riders, is my point, in the wild card round, right? Because of whatever reason, they weren't up there in the standings, but they're very good bull riders. And so six moves on, and then it was three head back to back. So those wild card guys rode four head back to back. Well, I say back to back, two one night, two the next night, right? And I'm just saying, hats off. I want to congratulate Fred Betcher, the PRCA, the Rank 45 X Bulls Tour. It was a really, really good event. And I want to say, because, you know, we talk about Pendleton, and I said I was here, but my boss, this is kind of cool, my boss here produced the event, is Bobby Corey, the son of Mr. Doug Corey, who's a legend in my mind. I just love him. He was in a couple of the meetings. He's here, past director, veterinary extraordinaire.
He's awesome. Yes.
He's awesome. And Bobby, his kid, is fantastic, well organized. But I'm going to say something. There's been times when I've sat at the awards banquet and saw the large outdoor rodeo of the year, and here comes the giant entourage of Pendleton because they almost always win. But let me tell you something, people. This event is special. These people here, this committee is special. And it's the most unique rodeo experience, right up there with Salinas. There's some of these rodeos. This place is just badass. And when I took my grandson, walked into the rodeo, he saw grass and he goes, "Tums, grass, what's going on?" And I'm like, "Yeah, they do it on grass here." You know,
which,
and so,
yes. And remember that the arena, that's the arena to this amazing extravaganza right now, is also the high school,
football field.
You know? And you know, while you mentioned Doug Corey, who's our great friend to all of us and has done so much for our sport, his late wife Heather was the first ever woman Pendleton Roundup director. And so that family, the legacy. And so that's really cool that their kid is doing that.
Well, and they have their first ever president this year, Tia, which is really cool. She rode in that gate at the opening of the performance. And you know, if you haven't seen it, they open their heads up going around that track. Enough to where some of us are going,
It takes some brass. And those young ladies who are their royal court, it takes some brass what they do to, I mean, you let it fly out onto that grass and hey, things happen. So,
well, you know, and again, there's a reason people win. This event's cool. It's just flat cool, and they're great humans. And I said this, you know, they got 1,200 volunteers and a huge committee, but every committeeman is assigned a task, and they do it well. And I just got to say, you know what, Letterbuck, I can't wait to follow this rodeo all the way out through the end.
For sure. And on behalf of all of the contestants, like, huge thanks to the rodeos who still allow, you know, a larger field of people to experience a rodeo like that. And it takes work and it takes slack. And you know how many people love nothing more, including myself, than to sit through slack at Pendleton and Salinas and some of these rodeos. It's it's, I mean, and this summer, you know, Cheyenne, I don't know what the future holds, but that experience, not just for the fans, but for the contestants is like just amazing.
They were parked, you know, they got a baseball field converted to a contestant lot. But I'm telling you, every single parking space in this thing at 6 a.m. on those 2 slack days was full of trailers. Like, it is just, it's something you should experience. You yes. really should experience it. $5, you get in and watch Slack. It's cool.
They honor the contestants as, you know, as being something special. And I've always thought it was interesting to have the conversation with my cowboy friends about the grass and guys like Derek Begay. You know, I'm like, so what do you think? And they're like, well, I respect it, but if you fear it, you probably shouldn't enter. You know,
it's well newsflash. You said Begay, and I thought you had liked to notice. And I'm actually hot off the presses. I was sitting in the stands before I came over here to do this. Petska and Begay 4.7, another one of those mile long loops.
But it wasn't Petska. Are you talking about?
Are you sure?
Begay and Pet and Coulter Todd. No. I haven't seen it.
Okay, well maybe I misheard it, but I know it's Begay, and I thought it was Petska with a 4.7. Well, since we're all about facts, let me double check that. But anyway, it's still watching them push those cattle down that. I mean, there's just so many cool ass things.
Yes. And they have done an extraordinary job of maintaining history and tradition in the coolest possible ways. And so it's one of those things that the cowboys always tell me, I just hope it never changes, you know? So that's a great compliment.
Amen. And they got some great fans here. The 5,000, they sold out both nights of the Rank 45 Expos event here at Happy Canyon. The fans, Kendra, they were on their feet the entire, and they know rodeo too. So they're not the rodeo fans that just sit there and know rodeo and turn and grumble and go, well, back when I did it, you know, the bulls were sunfishing and these guys are a bunch of. No, these fans know what they're watching at the rodeo. And, you know, my good, good friend, Billy Ward, seeing him in front of the chutes. There's so many things, watching Billy walk back and forth in front, Clint Humble and all those 6 of the best pick-a-men I've ever seen in my life out there. I mean, I just sound like a fanimal. This damn place is cool.
But Happy Canyon, I've been to both bull rides there, back, especially when it was a PBR event, and also watched the Happy Canyon night show. And every single seat in that venue is perfection. So
it's coolness. It's coolness. It's yep. coolness. Well, anything else on your notes?
No, I think
you've got something special for us, and I'm pretty damn excited about this, actually.
Me too. I had the chance to catch up with Jared Zane today, and as every single time with him, it just turned into so much more. Like, I don't know. It was a very special visit with a 6-time NFR bareback rider who only got to actually ride there 5 times because of an accident. The timeliness of this particular conversation is not coincidental. This is the 7th year anniversary of JR's life-changing wreck at the rodeo in Pasadena, Texas, where he was on the bubble and changed his life. And on the occasion of that, this is typical classic JR Bazane. He and his wife Shelby are launching the Spur Your Way Out Foundation to help other people overcome adversity, which I call JR Bazane the bright side cowboy. I'll never forget. He qualifies for the 2018 NFR, and I go blowing in the front doors there of, you know, at the Thomas and Mack, between those 2 escalators, and it's like the Thomas and Mack offices. And that's where you either take the elevator down to the arena floor, or, you know, take some stairs. And I walked in there, and there is JR. And that's the first time I'd seen him, and he was in a wheelchair. And it was just like, holy cow. And he's like, you know, Kendra, you know, I mean, making me feel better. And he had qualified, you know, but man, we got a chance today to talk about a lot of it and to talk about the day that his life changed, and also to talk about the things he's doing now. The guy's something. Anyway, the Bright Side Cowboy. You can hear some of the thousands of the reasons why I call him that here next, but I'm just grateful for the visit. That this, I feel so cliche to go, oh, he's such an inspiration. But it's like you talk to somebody like that and you're better for it. Because, you know, I was even talking to him, you know, today about like, I mean, do you ever have people, you know, guys maybe call you now about griping about maybe being on the bubble or getting a flat tire or something? Because I know that every once in a blue moon, I'm talking to, say, my friend who lost a son because his truck tire blew out while driving to the high school finals to watch his little brother, like, and I'm going to bitch about a house flood, you know? So it's just, anyway, the honor is mine every single time I get to talk to J.R. Vazane, but he's doing some really cool things. And so here you go.
Hey, JR, it's Kendra. How's it going?
Hey, Kendra, it's good. How are you doing?
I'm real good. Thank you. I wanted to visit about some of your new endeavors, specifically Spur Your Way Out. But first, I would love to cover a little bit of territory for those who aren't really familiar with how you got to this place, if that's cool with you.
Right on.
Okay, so I had a front row seat. You qualified for six NFRs in your bareback riding career, 2012, 13, 14, 16, 17, and 18, right?
Yes, ma'am.
But obviously, you know, couldn't ride there actually in 2018. But before we get to what happened next, I would love to ask you what your favorite all-time bareback riding career highlight is when you think back on those days.
Oh, those are such hard questions. It's very, very, very hard to compare to your first horse at the NFR. A very close second, obviously your first one, I think, ever. But as far as competition wise, when you, however you get into the sport, whether it's you grew up in it, you watched people in it, or you come in it later on in life, when you get serious about it and your dream is to ride in the NFR and that's what you shoot for and that's what you strive for, it's hard to compare the gratification of a lifelong dream and goal being accomplished and the emotions that are attached to the first one you nod your head in at the NFR. Now, outside of competition, I could tell you all sorts of stories that impacted my life that I still reminisce on that really, truly are great memories, but as far as competition, I would say the first ride, and I won go-rounds, I won the Canadian finals, those were all great wins. I won big rodeos, those were all great wins. But it's very hard to compare to the memory of the first one that you nod your head on in Las Vegas.
That's awesome. And the thing about it is like, and it's super relatable to me too as a rodeo mom, but you know, people who are not bareback riders, a lot of them will say that first time you ride in behind your state flag, but the bareback riders don't do that, right? Because you guys are back there getting ready. I almost wish that you didn't get robbed of that, because I think that's also a cool, you know, I get for production reasons that you can't, but I think that that's, it's very, all of this.
Oh, riding a grand entry? Yeah, that would be awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Okay, so now for the toughest stuff here. Okay, September 22nd, 2018, which we're coming up on 7 years, you were 26 years old, and there was a career-ending, life-changing wreck. Where did that happen, and what happened?
Crazy that that's 7 years ago, huh? Seems like yesterday. That was in Pasadena, Texas. I was traveling with Steven Dent, Tanner Ross, and Ty Brewer that year. Ty Brewer and Steven were safe. I think we had that. There is that weekend, and then prior to Sioux. Well, I guess maybe it was at Sioux Falls too. They kind of had a little tour finale there, but then it was a Challenge Champion or something. But we were entered in them. But Ty and Tanner had the finals made. Our Ty and Steven had the finals made. Tanner and I were on the bubble. So we did Kansas City, Omaha, that run. And we'd been to a few of them. I guess we'd been to Amarillo and Texarkana, and then ending the weekend in Pasadena. And that was it. That was the day.
Okay, so what do you remember about the actual wreck? You were conscious through it all, right?
I remember everything. I remember what shirt I was wearing. I remember how hot it was. I remember the hospitality dinner we ate before. I remember it all.
Okay, now you got me. What did you have for dinner at the hospitality?
They, just like every other Texas rodeo, they have brisket and beans and buns and green beans.
That's awesome. Okay, you nodded your head, and then what?
So that was a young horse of Frontiers called Brazos Bash. There wasn't any stats on it. I had called. It's hard to describe those moments because I was in that situation. I'm going regardless. It doesn't matter what I have. I'm going because I need the chance. I'm 14th in the world, and I don't care if it's a puke or a colt. I'm going to get on it. But for whatever reason, you do your research on the stock. So I called Tom Newens, and who worked for Frontier, and asked him about that horse. And he'd said that it had been out at the night rodeo all summer. Said it's actually a pretty nice little horse. Be just right. So that's what I was going there expecting. You know, some people, when they have traumas like that in their lives, they have a weird feeling or weird gut feelings or off days. I didn't feel any of that. I was ready to be done for the season. I was ready to take a break. I was ready to come home. My wife had just told me 3 weeks earlier on September 1st that she was pregnant, expecting our first child. So I had a bunch of that excitement going on in my life. I was ready to cap the season off and be done and go take a break and get ready for the MFR. Was a little dun horse rolled in there. Actually was fairly gentle, like we didn't even act colty. And Pasadena is, if I remember right, their loads are, they have a right and a left hand delivery, but they're backwards. So they load different, right? So I think on the left-hand side of the bucking chutes is actually a right-hand delivery down there, right? So that horse had been out of a left-hand delivery, so they loaded it on the left-hand side, but it would have been a right-hand delivery down there because they're backwards. So, but that didn't really affect it, I don't think. Honestly, what I think is it just hadn't been spurred that hard yet, had rider outs, but hadn't had J.R. Vazane digging the iron in it yet. And so slid up, nodded, everything was normal. It was all good. The vibes were good, was feeling good. I was there to win. I just had them feel good feels, you know, slid up, nodded, and she bucked around there. And it was like letting the air out of a balloon. You could just tell she just kind of out there lost feeling and jumping away. And she circled around and I was staring down the barrel, literally watching her buck back towards the buck and shoots. I seen it coming and kept spurring her through it. And she hit the buck and shoot and flipped over backwards. But before she flipped over backwards, I'd had them flip on me multiple times in my career, and you can usually roll out of the way. But the way she did it, she hit and kind of loaded on her hawks and kind of rattled there for a second and then jumped straight in the air and came over backwards. So when she jumped in the air, I felt it run me off my rigging, meaning run my hips farther down her back a little bit, which yeah. That's where all our pressure and power comes from. So it ran my hips off my rigging a little bit, and I just felt like a duck sitting out of water. I couldn't get out of the way. And it happened so fast, right? But in that moment, everything was slowed down. Mm-hmm. And I just felt her slowly come over the top of me, felt her roll on top of me. And there was a moment there of apex bend that I kind of flinched, and I actually tried to like brace and push with my back, like push her up off of me. And I felt something snap, kind of felt and heard something snap there. But I didn't feel that pain right there, obviously, or adrenaline's going and probably shock or whatever, but I didn't feel it. I didn't feel that. I just was trying to get out of the wreck. And then by the grace of God, when she got up, she rolled away from my hand or into my hand, so my hand could come out. So I rode left-handed, so she rolled off of me to the left, and then when she got up, my hand kind of hung there, but it was coming out. But when she got up, she gut stomped me, put both back feet right in the middle of my abdomen, one on my chest, one on my guts, and kind of jumped off of me. And that's where the pain came from. I instantly tried to get up. I posted up on my elbows. I heard the shriek of the crowd and the gasp and everything in the crowd, and then it all kind of got quiet. Donna Gay was announcing and said, "Holy smokes, boys, somebody come out and help this guy here. We got a serious wreck out here." I was trying to get up, and I was posted on my elbows and couldn't get up. I looked to the back of the buck and shoots. I seen Tanner. He was over there on that side. He was coming up either one or two after me. I seen him jump over the buck and shoots. I seen Anthony Thomas. He was there. He jumped over the buck and shoots, and everybody came and surrounded me. Robbie Hodges was the clown. He run to me. He was surrounded around me, and then sports medicine got to me, and they went to doing their tests. But that's when the pain set in. I couldn't breathe. It was the most pain I'd been in. I couldn't catch my breath. And they were telling me wiggle my toes, this, that, and the other thing. I couldn't feel, so I thought I was. I honestly didn't even know I was paralyzed at that point. And they brought the board out, put me on the board, and took me over to the sports med trailer. And I just kept thinking, I need to let Shelby know. I know this is bad. I knew it was serious, but I didn't know how serious. And I just kept telling him, "Can somebody call my wife and tell her I love her? Can somebody call my wife and tell her I love her?" And I sat there. They were kind of doing some of their tests. I could hear them talking. "Well, we don't want to send him to the Pasadena hospital. We better life flight him. We're worried about internal bleeding, and this is pretty serious." And I was waiting there, and I was starting to get aggravated. And I was like, "Are they gonna?" Then all of a sudden, I could hear the chopper. I hear them whistle down, and then it seemed like forever till they got me on it. Now I'm sitting in there, and I'm kind of panic mode. You know, I'm in a lot of pain, and finally I bark at the guy. I'm like, "Are we ever going to take off or what?" And he's like, "Oh, we're landing. We're there." I didn't even feel the helicopter take off. So they life flighted me to Memorial Hermann there in Houston. Was only a 5-minute helicopter ride and got me in. They started injecting me with the morphine and the pain meds, and it took a long time. There was a funny moment there, actually. So Doug Champion and Richie Champion, after the rodeo, they showed up, and then Nick Morrison, he was a buddy of ours. After I talked to Shelby, and she called Nick, said, "Hey, it's going to take me 24 hours to be able to get there. I can't get a flight out of here till tomorrow. Would you mind going and being with him?" And Nick has a brother that was paralyzed, so she felt a lot of comfort there. So Nick, he rushed in as soon as he got done with his stuff. So those guys stayed with me that night, on and off, checking on me. And, there was a moment there that I was still in a lot of pain, and I heard the nurse, she stepped around the curtain. She said, "Hey, I've given this kid enough morphine to knock a horse out, and I can't get his pain under control. What should I do?" And then they finally got the mixture right, and then that's when it kind of gets a little loopy. They took me in, did the x-rays, CAT scans. They told me the guy that they would suggest I use was Dr. Carl Schmidt, and he couldn't come in till 7 o'clock the next morning. So that would have been, I would have got there at what, 9, 9:30, 10 maybe, and waited. They rushed me in at 6:30 in the morning the next morning and fused T8 to T12. So what I ended up doing was chance fractured T9 completely all the way through. Chance fracture is horizontally broke that vertebrae all the way through, shifted the spine, and then I partially did the same thing at T10, and shifted the spine. That's what caused the paralysis. So basically T9, I'm a level T9, which is belly button down. They fused from T8 to T12, put two rods in and 8 screws, and sent me on my way, said good luck.
Good grief. Did they tell you, like, immediately you're paralyzed?
No. Now that you're asking that, I don't know that they ever told me that.
Really? I just I don't even know if roller coaster is the right word, because roller coasters have ups and downs. I just, the physical and mental challenges to a 26-year-old professional athlete to have this screeching halt of your livelihood, your life as you know it, and all these things. Like, I guess I hope that the morphine was at a very high level at that point. I don't know.
Once they got that mixture right, the pain went away. I went in and out through some sleep that night. I remember when he came in the next morning and introduced himself and the team. I remember him wheeling me to the surgery room, telling me what they were going to do, lay me on the belly. It was expecting to be a 5-hour surgery, this, that, the other thing. Like, I remember all that. But to be honest with you, at that moment, I still don't think that I comprehended how serious it was.
Okay. Maybe possible blessing. I don't know.
I had a peace of God that surpasses all understanding. I think that's the only answer. If I had to give you an answer, like, there's no reason that I should have been as calm as I was. I seriously thought I was going to walk out of the hospital room.
Wow.
I knew I couldn't feel. Like, I had another funny moment. They're cutting all my clothes off, and the nurse there is, she was a cute nurse, and I had got my mixture right by then, so the morphine's right, and I'm chatting with them or whatever, and all of a sudden I realize I'm laying on the table stark naked while they're getting my gown on, and I got super embarrassed, and I remember covering up and not saying another word for a long time, and so I remember those things, but I don't, like, so I remember, like, touching myself, and the feeling was different. Like, I couldn't feel necessarily – I couldn't feel my legs, you know, but I don't know that the severity of what I was even about to face had definitely not sunk in yet.
Well, okay. So, as these years are, I feel like they might be whipping by quicker for the rest of us than you. I don't know, but Shelby and then having your son Riot has made the two of them on this journey with you has made it completely different, right? I mean, had you been a single guy, right?
I got married in 2016.
Right. And so I'm saying, like, Shelby has been extraordinary, right? It's like, welcome to being a newlywed, and here's your new life. She's been amazing, right? You guys are...
It makes me emotional, Kendra.
As it should, I'm sure.
I don't have the answer for that either. That woman is absolutely a rock. It's weird to think about, because I'm 3 years older than her, so she was 23.
Wow.
We're kids.
Right. And then here, you're new into this
brand. And expecting a new kid.
But now I see you and the things you do with Riot, I'm like, it's just, it's amazing, like, to see you guys and what he's learning along the way, but also thank goodness for him and Shelby in your life, right? I mean, the three of you are doing amazing things.
How raw and real do you want to get here?
Whatever you want to do, it's your life. It's your
It was not a coincidence that timing happened that way, because Shelby had been ready to have a baby for quite a while, and I had some other things in my life that I needed to be set in order before I felt ready. And we'd had that vulnerable talk for 6 months, a year. And I was like, I'm not ready yet. I want a house of our own. I want bills paid off. I want more cattle invested in. I want some of the stuff. And we watched a documentary 2 weeks before I went to Pasadena. Yeah. And it was about a guy that got in a dirt biking accident and broke his neck and was paralyzed, and the rehab that he went through. And he had made a goal to walk the Death Valley race or whatever, where they walk 20 miles across the desert, and he ends up doing it. Mm-hmm. But it was just an incredibly inspiring documentary. And the very comment that I said at the end of that documentary, I said, if I were ever put in that situation, I would hope that I could have that guy's mindset. Like, it impacted me that much.
Wow.
And then I started making some other weird comments too. Literally overnight, Kendra, I woke up and I was like, you know what? I think I'm ready to have a kid. I was like, I don't know. I don't think I'll ever be ready, but I feel good about it. I think I'm ready. And I told her that. We literally, she tracked her cycle, tried once and caught.
Oh my gosh. That's awesome.
When she told me, it literally made a shift in me. And I even got to starting to say the comments. I was like, all right, I need to go win a gold buckle so that I can be done rodeoing, because I don't know if I can leave. I don't know if I can leave my family behind. And like, I was making weird comments. And so when that happened, I went. So the rehab hospital was really easy for me, because I don't know, my faith, I think, for one, and you got other people taking care of your real life stuff at home, you know, I kind of wasn't too worried about that stuff. Literally, my goal was wake up every day, try to walk, go to bed, and do it again. Yeah. And so the closer we got to, everybody thinks I'm tough. Shelby didn't even get experience the joy of a pregnancy. Like, she did it in rehab hospitals. So we did a month at Tier in Houston, and then transferred to 6 months south of Salt Lake City at NeuroWorks in Sandy, Utah. Away from family. Like, we had people come visit us, right? But yeah. I mean, we're in apartments and hotel rooms for 7 months during this whole time too. So then the closer we got to having Riot, we decided we wanted to come home. And that was a very hard decision for me, because I didn't want to give up the opportunities to go give myself the best chance to walking again by quitting rehab early. So I actually had to talk with my team, and they're like, oh no, you'll actually work harder. We trust your work ethic. You'll work harder at home than our therapist give you here. We think it'd be fine. If you feel like you regress, come back. If you feel like you make any big improvements, come back, whatever, right? We'll coach you. You set up an at-home gym. This, that, anyway. So we decided to come home to have Riot. And when I got home is when that got really hard for me. You had the joy of welcoming Riot into the world, and you had this kind of chaos of new parenthood, plus this new situation, plus trying to figure out how to co-parent from a wheelchair while still trying to walk, while still trying to figure out life, while still trying to figure out if we're even going to be able to keep running cows and what the heck life looks like, right?
Right.
And then once the newness of that wore off a little, once you kind of got in a routine of that, and life kind of carried on, it got really hard for me. Life at home got really hard for me. Because everything looked the same, everything smelled the same, everything was still positioned the same, but none of it was the same to me. Mm-hmm. And that sent me down some dark holes. Not ever really of a poor, pitiful me, type scenario, but more of, I feel like I'm a burden to everybody I'm around. My wife deserves a more capable husband that can do the man chores that she's happening to do. She deserves somebody that can do those jobs for her. My kid deserves a father that's more capable, that can teach him how to run a football pattern and put a saddle on his horse and throw a bareback rigging on, and like those type of feelings I had. But I got pretty dark. Yeah. And I didn't put a gun to my head, but I dang sure contemplated it. And I dang sure said the prayers, Lord, please don't let me wake up tomorrow, because I think the people around me would be better off without me. Mm-hmm. I even went as far as the thinking through what I would put on the note, Kendra. Oh, and nice. Shoot, I have one. I was like, I'm going to drive my four-wheeler over to the other side of the river and jump it off the cliff. And if I make it, I make it. If I don't, I don't. Like, I had some pretty messed up crap going through my mind. And the one thing I never let go of was my prayer life. I took every emotion. It changed. I maybe instead of it being a lucky rabbit's foot and what should I do type prayers, it was, Lord, I'm pissed, I'm mad, I'm struggling, I don't know how I can make it through this. But it seemed like at those moments, he would send me little things that helped me out. And if that boy hadn't been born, Kendra, I don't know if I'd still be here.
Oh, wow.
And that makes me emotional.
Well, understandably so. And I feel like, you know, I'm sure that in the physical therapy part, the fact that you were a young, fit man was very helpful, but also the mindset, right? Of for you to be as successful as you were in your bareback running career, there's no excuses. They don't work in these sorts of things. And so I feel like that excuse-free mentality, the progress that you've made since your life changed in Pasadena, it makes us all so proud for you. And I hope you're as proud of yourself as we are for you. But what, tell people what are some of the favorite things that you do these days, and how have you surprised yourself with how tough you are? I see you horseback. I see you rolling the wheels off that wheelchair with your arms, right? I mean, do you specifically not use the mechanical part sometimes? Or tell us about some of your favorite things to do now.
Oh, man. I'm a weird son of a gun, I've decided, because I feel like I've been on a journey. Maybe it's an age thing. I turned 33 this year. Maybe after the time I turned 30, it wasn't that all of a sudden I felt old, but I was like, maybe I should be way more grown up than I act and am. But I have been, and maybe it's just the situation that I got handed, the hand of cards that I got dealt. I don't know what caused me to go down this path, but been on a journey of really self-reflecting, and maybe I just been forced to do that too, because I've had to take my thoughts captive and make a change. I've had to decide whether I was gonna truly give up or not. I had to go through some hard things personally that I hadn't ever faced yet, you know, and none of them, I'd missed an NFR before. I'd missed horses out. All of those things seemed very, very, very minute to the mental battle that I was in, right? Mm-hmm. And so some of my fun things, honestly, are figuring out the joys of life and figuring out how other people think. Like, I love hearing other people's life lessons, and I love hearing how people overcome obstacles, because for a long time, for 3 years actually, to be specific, I'd hear the statement, man, if I were put in that situation, I don't know if I could have the same attitude that you have.
Right.
And I didn't know how to handle that situation I didn't know how to handle that statement for a long time, because I was like, I'm the same freaking guy mentally. I'm the same guy physically. I'm freaking still trying my guts out to get out of this wheelchair. I'm still the same competitor that I was that you guys were cheering for 3 years ago. I'm just riding a different bucking horse right now, you know? Yeah. And I didn't know how to handle that comment for a minute until I lived some life, and then I realized, yeah, you too actually could have this attitude if you are put in a situation, because it's a choice. I have to choose to have this attitude, and some days it's way easier said than done, right? I have bad days, I have frustration, I have struggles, but this situation has really turned me into a student of life. And I appreciate that. If there's any good that's come out of it for me personally, it's been that it's just take each day by day and find the joys in them, because we only get one life, and we get to be the author of the story. So with that, another fun thing that I have got to do is, not give up on who I am. Okay. It sent me down a self-reflection of really understanding who I am. Like, I knew I was a fierce competitor. I knew I had a never give up attitude, but truly getting to the bottom of why I am that way and why I believe what I believe, and getting in some of those wrestling matches and figuring some of that out. It's helped me not give up on who I truly am. 3 years ago, I had this kind of leads into some of the Spur Your Way Out stuff, but I was at a spot in my life where I'd gotten okay with everything being the way it was. Now, I've not ever given up on trying to walk. I try every single day. I still work out every day. I have a robotic leg machine that I wore the battery out of. I'm waiting to get the battery back on to be able to walk, put steps in every day. I try to wiggle my toes every single day, and I believe that I'm going to walk while I'm on this earth. Okay. I truly, truly, truly believe that. But something weird happened to me. There came this moment of surrender that I had to trust the Lord's timing, not my own, because up until then in my throughout my whole entire life, since I was a little kid and started wrestling at 5 years old, if I wanted something, I got it. And if I didn't get it, I went and worked a little harder until I did get it. And it which is a great thing. It's a great attribute to have, but also it was a curse to me, because I had never worked at anything harder in my entire life than to try to walk again. And I was seeing very minimal to no results. And I got to the spot where I was like, man, what if I don't? Like, is that what's going to define my success in life? And I had to make that choice. And it's still a battle that I go through, of that I can't let whether I walk again define my success, but rather the success of it. My success comes from who I am and who I'm becoming in this, through the process. And the bigger picture stuff is my success. When my buddies are gathered around at my funeral, spreading my ashes somewhere cool, horseback, yippee, yi, yi, ki, yan, the stories that they're going to be telling them, I want them to say about me, man, that guy tried his guts out and he did the best he could with what he had. And that's what will define my success. But I had to come to that realization, and I had to come to that spot. And that was very hard for me. That was a hard journey for me. But so with that, I got to a spot where I was okay with everything looking the way it looked. I hadn't given up on walking again, but I'd started trading cattle. I was repping for a company. That business was taking off. I was doing leather work, and that was kind of turning into a business. We were still running cows, and everything was kind of okay. I was kind of, we were settled in. Riot was 2 or 3 years old. You know, we were keeping him alive, so we were winning. Some of that stuff, life was happening, you know, so I was kind of good in my skin, my own skin again. But the horse riding side of my life being different was really, really keeping me frustrated. And as soon as we got home from therapy at Utah, it was the longest time in my entire life that I could remember not being horseback. And I loved rodeoing, but my true passion was horse, is just the horse. My true desire and passion is the horse. And I love training horses, and I grew up training colts, and we race them, and that sort of thing. So that was always, I was always destined to that, after I was done rodeo. Well, back in 2014, we went to the inaugural American Rodeo. We got checked into rodeo, and at that time I was traveling with RC Landingham, and Ty Skiver was a small cow horse trainer out in Oregon, and the Celebration of Champions, the World's Greatest Horseman, was going on at the Coliseum. So we got checked in the rodeo, and he said, let's go watch some of the cow horse stuff. So that, I didn't even know about cow horse. Like, I knew performance horse stuff, but that wasn't my click at home. We were kind of sagebrush, buckaroo, vaquero type cowboys, you know? And so bridle horses was my passion, making bridle horses was my passion, but I didn't even know there was a competition for it. So we went and watched some of that, and it got my rocks off. I thought it was the coolest thing since sliced bread. There's fancy horses packing fancy spade bits, fancy trained, chasing wild cattle around, and I thought that was cool. And I called Shelby at the time, and she said, how is it? I said, this is some of the coolest stuff I've seen. When I'm done rodeoing, I said, this is the world I want to get in. And at that time, I didn't necessarily care about the competing, but I wanted to go get emerged around as many of those high-end trainers as I could and learn as much as I could to be able to come home and teach my uncle something someday. And so when we got – so that my life has always revolved around horses, right? Even when I was rodeoing, you'd have a day off or here or there, I'd go ride. And we'd come home, I had the colts all the time I was riding. So for the longest time in my entire life, as far back as I could remember, 3 years old or whatever my earliest memory was, 9-8 months of not being horseback was the longest I could remember. So we got home on a Thursday, Saturday, I was horseback. So I'd been riding on the ranch. I'd been getting in the Brandon pen. I'd been riding around. I'd been kind of cowboying, that sort of thing, but it wasn't the same to me. It wasn't, I was just riding around like a bump on along, and I was having a hard time finding the joy in just the ride. And so I did a podcast with Marcus and Morgan Luttrell in 2020. And at the end of the podcast, they asked me what I'd be doing if the wreck hadn't happened. And I responded, I said, I'm doing exactly what I'd be doing regardless of wreck. We figured out how to keep ranching. I got all these other businesses going. They're kind of taking off. Life's good, you know. So I'd be doing exactly what I'm doing right now, regardless of the wreck, other than I always had a dream of getting in the rain cow horse world. So when I get walking again, that's what I'm going to do. Well, fast forward 2 years from that, 2022, I was in my leather shop and I was frustrated. It was March, my 3 year old colts were standing out in the yard and we were trying to decide who we were going to send them to. And I was pissed. I wanted it to be me, awful dang bad. And I said a prayer to the Lord. I said, here's the deal, man. Your word says that if I delight myself in you, that you'll give me my heart's desires. I said, I don't know how else. Either you got to show me how I can delight myself in you more, or you got to change my desires, because this is the only thing that's keeping me frustrated, is the horse riding side of my life being different. And so you either got to get this passion out of my heart, or you got to show me a way. 2 weeks to the day later, this fella calls me. Aaron Brookshire is his name. And He didn't know me. I didn't know him. He knew Ty Wallace, so we had one mutual rodeo acquaintance. He called Ty. He called Ty, got my phone number, called me up, said, "Hey, I listened to that podcast and said you had a dream of getting in the Rain Cowers world." Now, this is 2 years after the podcast has been released. He calls me up and he said, I've trained cow horses for 25 years. He said, "If you're willing," said, "I bet we can get it figured out." He said, 90% of my non-pros don't know how to use their legs anyways. So he said, "I don't know why you should give up on your dream." He said, "I don't think you need to wait." He said, "I think we can figure it out right now." I said, "All right." So that started that journey. That was 3 years ago. That got me. I'm at the bottom of the totem pole. I'm still got a lot to learn, but it started me on that journey that I needed to be on. Got me back into competing, which has been a huge breath of fresh air in my life. It's totally been fun. So the last 3 years, yeah, I've been shown in the NRCHA at the cow horse shows. Past couple years, I've called into the Celebration of Champions and the boxing this year. Currently, actually, I'm qualified in four classes, the boxing and the box drive. So we're slowly chipping away up the totem pole. And my dream's to go compete in the world's greatest horseman someday, whether I'm walking again or not.
Awesome. That one thing, you know, some of this stuff when you were talking, I had a couple little thoughts in my head. One was Ty Murray telling me a really long time ago, "Toots, you need to quit worrying about shit you can't control." And I don't know, you know, I don't know. I mean, I remember clear as a bell, my first conversation with my friend Jerome Davis, the world champion bull rider, when he got paralyzed at Tufts Bull Riding in 1998 in Fort Worth. And he's like, "Okay, you know, I'm good. Now, if you call me in 10 years, and I'm still in this chair, I don't know if I'll be quite, you know, I don't know if I'll be quite as happy-go-lucky as I feel right now." But I mean, and he's, of course, done some amazing things, of course, with Tiffany by his side, like Shelby's by yours. But I also, something that crossed my mind when I didn't want to interrupt is, you know, every once in a while, there's rough stock guy who takes a victory lap. And you think, how can this guy be so good at riding bucking horses and he can barely make the circle on a saddle horse, right? And so obviously you were not one of those people. anyway, one thing, you know, and I do want to, before we get out of here, I do want to talk about Spur Your Way Out because it sounds amazing. Something that's right now, you know, everybody's at Pendleton and everybody's just been at Puyallup and then here comes Sioux Falls and all these things. Do you ever find yourself frustrated when you hear people complaining about the little things in life? For example, very relatable at this particular moment, there's a lot of guys on the bubble. I mean, what do you ever have a chance? Do you ever find yourself talking to these people, or what do you say to these people that are like, "Oh my God, you know, I don't think the sun will come up tomorrow if I end up 16th or, I mean, compared to what you're going through, that probably seems kind of lame, right?
It does not seem lame to me at all. Now, I got to interject here that it drives my wife absolutely up the wall insane crazy when people call me and complain about their life to me.
Yeah,
it has never bothered me that way. I've never looked at anybody less. I've never whatever, because here's what I think about problems. Problems are problems. Doesn't matter if it's a wheelchair, loss of a family member, a blown tire on the highway that's going to make you late for work, or the pipes freeze in the winter in Montana. A problem is a problem. And a broken leg, broken arm, who am I to say that your problem has less of an impact on you than my problem has on me? Now, so I have that heart when people call me and complain about life and all this, that, and the other thing. That's honestly, that's always been my heart. It's never annoyed me. I have a lot of them, Kendra. My phone is busy all the dang time, all the time, of guys needing encouragement. But here's the funny thing. I usually don't have to hardly tell them anything. Just by being an ear, they get to tell themselves, "Well, why am I complaining to you about this?" They get to have that recollection and reflection that the only way to fix the problem is what? Change your perspective. And that's how I handle my problems. A problem's a problem until I change my perspective and face it head on. And then it no longer becomes a problem. It just becomes an obstacle to get around, you know?
Yeah.
So it does not bother me. Problems are problems. And I love encouraging people. It's one of my favorite things to do. I love being a pump me up. I love when guys reach out to me and need a little boost of encouragement, and it comes naturally, and it's actually easier from this situation to encourage somebody because of that. And going back to your other question, some of the fun things you get to do, that's part of it. Like, I've just not giving up on dreams that I thought I might have to give up on. That's truly been fun. Being able to be a good dad, watching that boy grow up, getting to ride horses with him. Sure, it might not look like the way I had envisioned it before, and it might not look like I necessarily totally want it to look or feel like I necessarily totally want it to feel, but the joy that comes from those things is still there. And just not continue. What do I do for fun? I continually try to prove to myself that I don't have to give up on the dreams that I truly want to go get accomplished. And so, but when other people call it problems, we all have problems. Everybody is faced with problems in life, and I'm not the judge on how your problem affects you. So I open that stuff with open ears, and I love to be a soundboard for people to bounce their life off of. And 90% of the time, I hardly have to say anything. I don't even have to compare situations because they do it for themselves.
Wow. Okay. You and Shelby recently launched Spur Your Way Out. And correct me if I don't have this right. My understanding is this is a nonprofit foundation aimed at helping people overcome adversity. Does that sound basically right?
Yep. It's been a project on our hearts for several years. We got it launched the beginning of September. We launched it in September because September is my anniversary month, and September is also Disability Awareness Month. The drive behind it, so there's, I don't know how much more time we got, but I'll try to keep this short. So there was three materialistic things in my life that helped dig me out of those dark holes that I was talking about. When I first initially got hurt, we had $500,000 worth of medical bills stacked up, and $300,000 of it was donated to us. And that humbled me, but it didn't change my life. When tragedy strikes close to your community or your family, it always seems like the community and family bands together and helps bail you out, right? So it humbled me, but it didn't change my life. Now, a year or two later, I went over to a bronc match in Gardner. They had invited me over there to judge the bull riding. Well, they didn't end up having any bull riders enter, so I was actually trying to get out of it. And I was busy, didn't want to go, and they talked me into it. I just had this feeling, well, I told them I'd be there. I'm a man of my word. I better show up. My brother-in-law is going to be riding there, Sage, so we can go support him and go see some buddies. So I went over there. Now, Diamond G put that on, and I'd done nothing but cuss Diamond G Rodeo as being the worst PRCA stock contracting firm there was during my time of rodeo. And I'd went to the rodeos, I got on their horses, whatever, but them as a company, I'd done nothing but cuss them as a company. And I showed up there, and my father-in-law kept coming over. The arena's in a beautiful, picturesque setting, but the setup of it's a little itty bitty arena, and from the side view was honestly a great view. They didn't have bleachers and stuff in the way. It was just everybody was hanging out there, and it was a great view. So my father-in-law, he kept coming over to me and asking if I wanted to go behind the buck and shoot. So I was like, no, I'm good. I can see really good right here. Comes back a second time, same thing. Comes back a third time, and he's like, they want to give you an award or something. And instantly it pissed me off, Kendra. Like, I got instantly mad. I was like, why? It's like, this isn't even my event. This is a bronc riding. This is Sage's time to shine. I don't want to be still in his spotlight. Like, I freaking knew I shouldn't have came here. And so they wheel me out in the middle of the arena. I'm frustrated, and I'm sure I'm wearing it too. Yeah. And they play this video. And Steve Gilbert had bought and donated me a track chair, which is It's got tracks on it like a skid steer track. It stands up. It's a chair that stands up, and it's battery driven. It's very, very, very liberating tool for me. It's a $30,000 machine, and Steve just he gave it to me. And I had to go up to that. I got served probably one of the biggest piece of humble pie that I've ever been served in my entire life. And I had to go up to him. I had to shake his hand and tell him, I've done nothing but cuss you guys as a rodeo company, but I will never cuss you as a man. This truly changed my life.
Wow.
And later on, I went down and did a study to get the robotic legs. Or I did a study with the robotic legs. And the first day I was in them, I was like, man, I need a set of these. So we had... Shelby and I, we decided, I think I need a set of these bad. So we looked at them. They're $100,000. I was going to come home, sell some cows, and I didn't care what I had to do. If I take out a loan or sell my left kidney, I was going to get that set of robotic legs bought. And L'Oreal Harvard Bronchorad Nation caught wind what I was up to, and behind my back went and got money funded. There was a ton of people. They helped Western Sports Foundation bailed in, donated $50,000. Mitch Pollock at his Bronc match in October hosted the end of the fundraising. And to see people give their hard-earned dollar, this was three years after my wreck, to watch people give their hard-earned dollar to help me continue to chase a dream, desire, and passion of mine changed my life. And then thirdly was that phone call from Aaron. Now I did have to go sell my left kidney to afford the horse that I bought to go show, to go be able to show. But, regardless, him, a stranger being convicted and having the courage to call a stranger and offer what he's offered me, truly changed my life. And so those three materialistic things really, and they came at very impactful moments in my life that I kind of at that crossroads of man, I don't know, of acceptance and giving up, you know. And what those moments did for me was just re-spark that little bit of hope that I needed to keep on keeping on. And so I want to be able to do that for other people, because I know what it's like to be in that dark hole, and I know what it's like to question what life looks like. And I know what it's like to question if I can, what if I can't, and to have that wrestle match. And I want to be able to help people spur their way out, and can continue to inspire and encourage people to not give up on chasing your dreams, desires, and passions, no matter what life hands at you.
Well, it's noble, but it's like what a purpose. It's obviously so personal. It couldn't be more personal. But to take, I mean, I guess that's silver lining stuff, right? I mean, you take something that had you in a very dark place by, you know, and by your own admission, and to use it to try to brighten other people's worlds. Sounds like a hell of a purpose. So, so people to find out, spuryourwayout.com is where people go.
Spuryourwayout.com. Yep. We launched a website. We have a podcast also where we're telling Spur Your Way Out stories. We're doing the first season here. Shelby and I are just candidly going through, telling our stories. We've released two episodes. We're going to do one a month for the rest of the year. And then our goal with that is to be able to start getting guests on and be able to celebrate people's victories, but also get to the raw, real nitty gritty of Spur Your Way Out stories, how people continued on, when life handed them lemons. And so we got the podcast, we got the website. There's going to be merch we're going to be dropping soon, and yeah, hopefully hosting some events. So that's kind of the gist of it and the goal of it.
Good for you. Well, congratulations on being a badass, JR, is my basic message to you. And I really appreciate the visit. It's, you're amazing. And I'm so happy for you and the life that you and Shelby and Riot have. You're I don't know. You're doing things so many people. I'm going through my second house flood here in a couple of years, and I'm just laughing because there's perspective every single place I look. You know, it's like, so I have no indoor plumbing. So what? You know, and it's just I don't know. There's always a bright side, right?
There's always a bright side. I 100%. I think that's my biggest life lesson as of right now is you can always find something to be grateful for. And when I shift my mindset to looking for those things to be grateful for, there is not one thing that I can't conquer. And I know that to be true in my life. And I think that's true for everybody's life. When I just handle the battle that it is thrown at me today, but I keep my eye on the things to be grateful for, this day cannot beat me. And I've come to realize that I appreciate your compliment of badassery, but I'm really not. I've come to the realization that the only two things that I can control in this life are my effort and my attitude. And if that is what dubs me as a badass, then so be it. But all I try to do is have the best attitude I can and try my guts out. And I hope to continue to do that. And I think if everybody would do that, there's nothing that they can't accomplish.
Well, thank you for inspiring others to do the same. I really appreciate it. So thanks a lot. I really appreciate it. And I'm off to listen to the Spur Your Way Out podcast. Thank you. I didn't realize. So I'll look forward to that. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Yep. We got two episodes out. We'll have another episode dropping the 17th or something this month. And then, yeah, it's been super fun. I'm excited to see where that goes and what we learn and how we change and how we're challenged through that. There's some stuff on there that even Shelby and I hadn't really even talked about before. So it's been pretty fun.
Awesome. The last thing I'm going to say right here is what you just said that stands out in my mind. This day cannot beat me. Those are some pretty great words. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Absolutely.
Right. Take care of yourself, and I'll look forward to another visit one of these days soon.
Well, thanks for having me on. It was a pleasure and an honor.
Thank you, JR. Take care, and hello, best to your family.
Yep, sounds good. You guys too.
Thank you. See you later.
Yep, see you.
All right, bye.